Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Oh, I feel shame. Normally, I'm the one dishing out the shame to the super fans, and oh, there's quite the bit of amount of shame to be dished out this week. I am Pod Vader, and I feel shame because last week I gave you only 7 correct picks, and I blew my lock of the week, which was the Ravens. Now, where I don't feel as much shame as our super fans normally should feel for not doing their job, I was still better than average, according to ESPN.com. Average. So I'm still better than average. Woo! All right. I've got 2 super fans joining me for the previews of week 3. One of those is Ron, our Dolphin super fan. Ron, how'd you do last week?
Oh, I don't do the pick'ems. I can't even decide what my team's going to do, apparently. So why would I think I'd know anything about other teams?
Oh, we're going to get to that. Monty is our Raiders super fan. Monty, what's happening?
Not much. I came in with 8 wins, 8 correct picks last week. So I'm feeling pretty good.
There you go. You're the smartest among us. Well, smartest among us on this podcast, because first place in the Next Fan Up Pigskin Pick'em group, go to ESPN.com/fantasy, click on the Pigskin Pick'em game, search Next Fan Up in the groups if you want to join us. First place right now is English Simon. But that makes sense, because what do the Brits know about football, really? Right? Am I right, guys? Come on.
I think he said he's picking based on team colors.
he got 10 right in week 1, 10 right in week 2. He leads the super fans with 20. Right behind him is Andrew, our Jet super fan, and Ken, our Charger super fan. They're both tied with 19 apiece. Yeah, there you go. That's our Pigskin Pick'em update. If you want to join us, like I said, ESPN.com/fantasy. Click on the Pigskin Pick'em game. Search for the Next Fan Up group. By the way, you can tweet us at NFU Podcast. You can also check out all of our previews, all of our super fan. Well, most of our super fans, the ones that don't feel shame, have done previews for week 3, and you can read all about it on Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. And you can see everything that they wrote. We'll be taking bits and pieces from those previews for this particular podcast. And a few people have joined us for the Battle of the Superfans, including our Thursday night preview. And Sam is our Giants super fan. Sam, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. How are you, Pod?
I'm doing fantastic. The mysterious Drew, Redskins superfan, continues to somehow be a part of this group because he's protected by Sitko, our Sunday host. But I still have yet to see anything from Sam from Drew or hear anything from Drew. So, Sam, this is going to be a very one-sided battle, I have to say.
I guess that means I win.
There you go. Winner.
Yeah.
We have the Redskins at the Giants tonight, Sam. How do you see this game playing out for your New York Giants?
Well, yesterday was the Jewish Day of Atonement, and today is the Giants Day of Atonement. And we just have to figure out our last 2 minutes, and then we should have been 3-0. But, you know, the Redskins are surprising a lot of people. They have a defense that limits teams, and then they just run the ball down your throat in these 3 tight end sets and just go big on you and play smash mouth football. And honestly, as a Giants fan, that scares me because our line is not very good. Our secondary is. So, you know, the Redskins are playing right into our weaknesses, so that's kind of scary. Although, you know, a team quarterback like Kirk Cousins should never really scare you. And on the other side of the ball is just, can he, like, get his act together? Can he keep his head in the game for 60 minutes and, you know, deliver a win? Because the last 2 weeks he's played 58 minutes as a great starter, somebody who looks like he can lead this team to the playoffs this year. And then in the last two minutes, he's just, you know, one of those things where you get the Eli face and he blows the whole game.
The Eli face. For the Redskins, I'll bring Ron and Monty here to help us here in this battle. Anybody know who this Matt Jones character is? Because he's just come out of nowhere from me.
Don't worry, I'll know about him tomorrow once he runs around through and all over this Giants, these Giants linebackers.
You're so positive, Sam. You're so positive.
I was. It was two weeks ago. I would have bet my house that the Giants were making the playoffs, and then after 2 weeks, the team shouldn't be in the NFL. It's just it's embarrassing. It's not even. I can understand when a team doesn't have the skill, and you know there's more skill on the other side of the field, and you lose games like that. It's just it's hard as a Giants fan to hear that Eli, you know, he has the head for the game. He may not be athletically as skillful as other quarterbacks, and just see him screwing up over and over again. It's just these are JV mistakes that shouldn't be happening at this level. So it takes all the excitement and joy out of being a Giants fan for right now.
Number five game, as this is going to be one of my new favorite toys here on the Next Fan Up podcast, says that it is likely that Washington will cover 3.5 points. That they are +3.5, and the likelihood of them covering is 53.4%. It sounds like, Sam, you are resigned to believe that is true.
Yeah, my specific prediction is Giants 28-14 at the 4-minute mark of the fourth quarter, and we somehow lose 31-28.
Oh my goodness.
An Eli pick six, a blown coverage, and then a incredibly poorly run 2-minute drill in which we give the Redskins the ball on like our 40 with 47 seconds left, and they kick a field goal, and that's the game.
Wow. My official pick on this one, and this is going to be the theme that I have all this week, is who do I believe in more? Do I believe more that the Redskins are a 1-1 team or that the Giants are an 0-2 team? And honestly, that question could be very loaded, but I don't believe that the Giants are worse than the Redskins. And thus I am going to take the Giants here at home on the short week. That's mostly the basis of my picking the Giants here. Ron, you have a pick?
I will take the Redskins.
All right. And Monty, how about you?
Every time they start talking about the need to fire Tom Coughlin, the Giants seem to go on a run and win the Super Bowl. So I'm actually taking the Giants at home tonight.
That was my burning question for Sam this week. Is this finally the end for Tom Coughlin?
I wrote on Facebook, I still feel this way, that Tom Coughlin is a great coach 5 years ago. The game has evolved so much since then with these new spread offenses and being more aggressive and not trying not to lose the game, but actively trying to win the game. You see that Steelers going for two all these times. And I just think the Giants need a more aggressive coach and someone to, you know, really invigorate this offense and defense. I think after a while, it just becomes stale. Seeing the same old routine from Tommy. So it's not that he's a bad coach, but I do think it's time for him to go.
I agree that it's more of a trend in the NFL, but who's really been winning that way? I still haven't seen a team win the Super Bowl in that new method. I still see teams winning Super Bowls or getting the Super Bowls closer to what Tom Coughlin, Chip Kelly does.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I mean, you know, we're looking at Chip Kelly's on one end of it. You saw last year Tom Brady marching up and down the field with quick completions to his receivers and splitting it out wide, telling daring defenses to guard four back. I mean, the Packers have historically been good. I mean, anytime they're not in the Super Bowl or the championship game, it comes down to an injury, and they play an extremely aggressive offense. And, I mean, it's easy to pick anecdotal evidences like Sean Payton kicking the onside kick in the Super Bowl. I just think you have to be more daring and have to be willing to change your game. You don't have to fully adapt it, but there should be elements to see that you're acknowledging the change in the game and trying to make your team better instead of like just trying not to lose games.
All right, that's going to do it. Sam, I know you got to run. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Have a great day.
And the first battle of the Superfans for week three, we're going to have the Dallas Cowboys hosting the Atlanta Falcons. I'm Ryan, just handling this battle here, the Jaguars Superfan. Let's say hello to Tim. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I am doing great. Let's go over to Brian. How are you doing, Dallas Cowboys?
I'm a little conflicted right now, 2-0, but we're missing some pieces, but I'm ready to go into this battle with Atlanta.
True. We'll get into that. All right, Tim, we have the 2-0 Atlanta Falcons, and this is a matchup between two 2-0 teams, obviously, and you're going in, you're facing the Cowboys, who are a little undermanned, let's say, but you got to be feeling pretty good. Tell me about the Falcons heading into week three.
I mean, realistically, utterly surprised, and yeah, I felt good going into the season about what we had and what we changed and that sort of thing. But to be 2-0 at this point is an utter shock after watching the games. If Philly could kick field goals, then we'd have started 0-1. And if Eli Manning could close a game at all this year, then we'd be 0-2. The fact that we're still fighting at the end of these games is fantastic. And realistically, I've said it before multiple times on this podcast. I don't like going against teams that are depleted, but you know what? I'll take a 3-0 start to the year.
And you've got the Texans after that and the Redskins, who are maybe better, but who knows? So
and the Saints teams that just don't look good. And
Titans, Bucks.
It's scary to think that we could legitimately start 5 or 6-0, not trying to get too far ahead, but I mean, teams that just look depleted. It's interesting.
I am with you, and it's nice that you're keeping perspective there, because I kind of agree. It's almost a little surprising, but you could certainly just rack up those wins as we go. But let's not give you the W just yet. We'll go to the 2-0 Dallas Cowboys, and you're going to have Brandon Whedon dropping back and throwing to Cole Beasley. And is it Escobar too? I mean, I'm sure Whitten will play, but Brian... Obviously, Tony Romo is going to be out. Dez Bryant's already out. How do you feel about week three? But also, tell me about beyond with the backups playing.
It's going to look like the second week of preseason, really. I mean, we've got Eden out there, no Romo, no Dez. The offense at this point, it's up in the air. We've talked all offseason about how our offensive line is really going to have to pave the way for this team, no more so than they're going to have to do right now. And they haven't looked good the first couple games. They haven't as dominant as they have last year with DeMarco. So we're really going to have to lean on them. We don't want to have to see Brandon Whedon dropping back 30, 35, God help us, 40 times and trying to throw our way to victory, because it's just not going to happen. So we're going to have to lean on the running game, and I really think we can get, because I'm not impressed whatsoever with Atlanta up front. They do have one rookie from Clemson that I am a fan of, but it's probably not the one you're thinking, Tim. But what's been really, really encouraging is the improvement on the defense. I knew we would be better bringing in some guys on the defensive line, getting Sean Lee back, the reigning defensive player of the week. Sean Lee, he has looked phenomenal. The move to weak side linebacker to free him up and just run to the ball, it was genius from Rod Marinelli. And Sean Lee, God willing, he can stay healthy. He could be the player of the year. But the improvement we've seen at all three levels has really caught my eye, especially in the secondary. I've been the biggest Morris Claiborne detractor you can find. I called him the biggest draft bust in Cowboys history. He's finally healthy, and he finally looks like, we get flashes of that top 10 pick. I'm real interested to see what it looks like going up against Julio. Now, Julio, in my eyes, is right up there with Antonio Brown as the best receiver in the league. And I'm, as everyone should be, I'm scared of that matchup. We handled Odell Beckham, and so that's encouraging. So I think we can at least slow down Julio enough, slow down the Falcons offense enough to where we don't have to get into that 30-point shootout, because there's no way we're going to be able to manage that amount of points. So feeling good about this defense, not just today, but going forward. We've got those reinforcements coming back in Hardy and McClain and Randy Gregory. we're going to be a defense and run the football team. And going into the season, I never thought I would say that, but that's what we're going to be leaning on going forward. And that's what we're going to be leaning on going against Atlanta.
Well, that's interesting you say that. I do think the defense is better. I will say, you know, certainly at this point in their careers, I do think Julio's a better player, but that's only because Beckham is inexperienced. So we'll see. Tim, how do you feel about your offense going against the Cowboys' defense?
Like he said, you know, with Sean Lee being back, you know, their defense looks good. They did a better job against the Eagles than we did. But honestly, you know, the thing that they did well against the Eagles was stopping the run. We're not going to be running the ball. We don't have Tevin Coleman. You know, Devontae Freeman showed that, you know, he can't carry the load, you know, running the ball. They were just, you know, throwing him out of the backfield and, you know, that sort of thing. So realistically, I mean, my only question is who covers Julio? What two players have to cover Julio? And then by using two players to cover Julio, who's going to cover Roddy? Who's going to cover Jacob Tammy? Who's going to cover Hankerson, who actually had a surprisingly good game? I legitimately think there's too many weapons on the offense that there's no way that Dallas keeps up in this game. And, you know, I mean, the past couple weeks that I've been on these, I haven't been incredibly positive about what our offense looks like, but our offensive line is surprisingly decent and they're, you know, they're working together. Kyle Shanahan's doing a really good job keeping them, you know, moving, that sort of thing. So like I said, I don't want to come in here too positive and say that we're going to start 3-0, but I have a really hard time thinking that a Cowboys team led by Brandon Weeden is going to beat us right now.
Right. Well, that kind of makes your team a little one-dimensional. Brian, how's your team stopping the run? Do you think they can do it with few defenders and that gives you more guys in the back end to cover Julio and the weapons?
Absolutely. I'm not worried about the Falcons run game. It hasn't shown me much the first couple weeks. And like you said, your best running back, Tevin Coleman, isn't going to be back there. I'm not worried about the running game. I think that we can allot a few more people to the back end. But I think what's really going to help our back end is our pass rush. And again, I know we don't have Hardy. We don't have Gregory. But we've gotten a tremendous push up the middle from Tyrone Crawford. That contract that he signed, it's no joke. He deserved every bit of that $45 million, and he's going to show the league why. He's going to be a Pro Bowl-level player, and I don't think there's anyone up the middle in the interior of the Atlanta offensive line who can stop him. DeMarcus Lawrence coming off the edge, I think that's just going to shrink the amount of time Matt Ryan has. I'm not, you know, Julio, like I said, Julio is one of the best. I'm still not crazy about Hankerson. I think y'all are going to end up missing Harry Douglas a little more probably than expected. I'm not too concerned about all the weapons. I think with Carr and Claiborne on the outside and how well they're playing, I have been tremendously surprised by Tyler Patman in the slot taking over for Scandrick. He has played very well so far. Byron Jones, he's been taking those tight ends in the slot, and you know he's looked good as well. He's still got some experience to gain, but I think we have the guys in the secondary to at least slow down this offense. It's going to be a one-dimensional game. Our pass rushers are going to pin their ears back and come after Matt Ryan, and I think we're going to do enough to slow you guys down.
All right, before we started recording, Tim was bringing the fire to Brian and me and everybody in his path. And depending on time, who knows if this will be kept, I would just like to hear you got something to say about the greatest kick returner of all time, Devin Hester. Give it to us, Tim.
Yeah, so I work with a friend, and her husband works for a security company, and they're contracted to go to specific locations and do security. And on Monday night, he was contracted to be a bouncer at a strip club, where somebody came up with a Florida driver's license and hands it to, you know, the guy, and the guy says to him, you know, what's your birthday? And he says, it's right there underneath where it says Devin Hester. Devin Hester's missed the first 2 weeks with a hamstring injury. And on Monday night, instead of sitting at home rehabbing the hamstring, he's out at strip clubs. I have an issue with this as a fan. Like, we're paying him $3 million. A year. I know it's not a lot of money when you think about an NFL athlete, but that's $3 million to be out there. And he's not out there right now because he's too busy, you know, getting his jollies in a strip club that I've never even heard of. So who knows if this is even a good strip club in Atlanta or not? Like, Hester, get your act together, get back on the field because, you know, I mean, Weems isn't getting it done returning the ball. Every time he pulled the ball out of the end zone, he was getting stopped at the 14. Like, we brought you in for a reason. You're on the team for a reason. Be on the team. don't be on the strip club. And the only reason I have an issue with it is because today, Wednesday, again, missed practice. Go home. I don't know if you're married or not, but if you are, I hope your wife hears this and she puts you on lockdown, because you need to be thinking about the team and stop thinking about whatever girls are working at the strip club I've never heard of on a Monday night. Dude, come on. It's Monday night. Like, who goes to a strip club on Monday night? For real, Devin Hester, like, you're an NFL athlete. If you want to see what you can see at a strip club, you can do that just by walking up to a hot girl at Publix and just being like, hey, girl, I'm Devin Hester. And she's going to be like, oh, hello. Yes. This ring? What ring? Boom. Devin Hester. That's how you do things. All right? All right? Get it together, boom, bro.
Well, there you go. Tim calling out Devin Hester. And let me give you some kudos, Tim, for keeping it family friendly and saying getting his jollies instead of some other kind of phrase. Congratulations on that.
I don't want to put the E on the podcast. Pockets mad when we have to put the E on the podcast.
Right. All right. Well, again, this is a matchup where Brandon Whedon is going up against Matt Ryan. But let's get your predictions for the games. Fellas, let's go with Tim first. Give us your winner and score.
Winner, Atlanta Falcons, score 31-17. And the 17 is being polite.
All right, and Brian, the new Dallas Cowboys, what are we going to see in week 3?
You're going to see a ridiculous effort from a team that knows it's depleted. They're going to back up Brandon Whedon. We're going to dominate time of possession again. Cowboys 20, Falcons 17, and perhaps that's being a little generous. We get the win, we go to 3-0, and who knows what happens after that.
There you have it. Let's see which team gets their jollies come Sunday, Falcons or Cowboys. We have the Denver Broncos going up against the Detroit Lions. Mike is our Denver Broncos super fan. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on? How's it going?
Hey, it's going great. And Adam, our Detroit Lions representative, how you doing?
Doing great.
All right, so Sunday Night Football, we got Peyton Manning coming to town. That a lot of times that's where he shines. Mike, you had a crazy win over the Chiefs, pulling it out at the end with some fumbles and wacky stuff in 9 seconds. Everyone was wondering if Peyton Manning was completely done. So give us your assessment of Peyton Manning and tell us how the Broncos are doing heading into week 3.
So I got to start off by saying that game on Thursday was one of the best football games I've ever seen. I went into it saying that Thursday nights are always sloppy football games. It may have been sloppy from a Chiefs fan, definitely wasn't well executed from the Denver side of the ball. However, that was a pretty exciting game for any football fan. Peyton Manning had a pretty good quote the other day talking about how everyone talks about how the sky's falling when you're 0-2. We're sitting here at 2-0, and still everyone's talking about how the sky is falling. I like where we're at. It's going to be a change in mentality. Everyone's used to the Denver Broncos being a powerhouse offensive team. 2 years ago, we lit it up, lit everyone up offensively. It's a shift of mentality. It's a different kind of football. No one's worried when Russell Wilson has a bad game and the Seattle Seahawks wins. That's the type of team we are right now. Peyton Manning's not done. He's definitely struggling. He has an offensive line that has not come together yet. I'm confident with where this team's at, mainly because how the defense is played, though.
Right. Well, let's roll it over to our home team, the Detroit Lions. I'm going to play optimist here. You had a game against the Chargers that you could have possibly won. You obviously gave up a big lead, and then you had a tough game going into Minnesota. Never quite in that game, as far as I understand, unless you saw it differently. But you had two road games, and now you're heading home for a night game. Tell us where the Detroit Lions are at into week 3. Can they get their first win of the season?
It's going to be very tough. It's going to be very tough. We're going to get into matchups a little bit later, I'm sure, so I won't dive into that right now. But the Broncos bring a lot of things to the table that the Lions are not playing well against right now. Combine that with the fact that I'm pretty sure Matthew Stafford's being held together with duct tape and bubble gum at this point. After that Minnesota game, and I'm very nervous.
Right. What is the status of Stafford? Is he going to play? He's just hurt.
He's last I heard, he's looking optimistic to play, although I haven't heard an official designation yet. Just to rattle it off, somebody in the locker room reported that he had two toes on either side taped together, so dealing with some sort of toe issue on both feet. A laceration on his arm, on his left arm, that if you watch the game, he was bleeding from like crazy. He's dealing with a wrist issue on his throwing hand, and he got x-rays after the game for possibly cracked or broken ribs. So he took a pounding. Based on what I've heard, he still should be able to play, but I'm nervous.
So other than that, everything's great. So, okay, tell me about a matchup that you're looking at in the Detroit-Denver game then, Adam. Positionally.
Our offensive line has struggled considerably. It was decent last year. There's been a big-time fall-off. Our right tackle, Adrian Waddle, has been injured so far. He hasn't gotten a chance to start yet. The right tackle starting in his place has just been abused. And I don't know if it's, you know, they're calling shifts in the line and stuff to try to compensate for that. But looking at the Denver defense and the pass rush that they can bring between Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, a lot of screens, a lot of draws. We got to get the ball out quick. Otherwise, Stafford's not going to finish this game. So the offensive line and blocking scheme of the Lions versus the Denver pass rush is going to be the matchup I'm really looking at.
Certainly scary when you're going up against Miller and DeMarcus Ware. Mike, any matchup that you're looking at with the Broncos and Lions in this game?
So it's hard not to talk about Tlaib versus Johnson. I'm assuming it's going to be Tlaib on Johnson majority of the game. Obviously, Johnson's one of the biggest playmakers in the NFL, but I got to pretty much go with the same thing that with what Adam was saying. The offensive line for the Denver Broncos is so bad, it's going to be interesting to see how Haloti Ngata like rips through that line. I'm hoping that Denver Broncos can find a way to stop him and everyone else lined up next to him.
So it right. looks like between the two teams, we're looking at an average depth of target of about 3 yards this game.
Yeah, and no drop back. Regardless of is Manning done or not, I think it's clear that he's throwing shorter passes and hasn't been able to hit on many deep balls. So maybe we are looking at a lower scoring game, even though this is prime time and it's Peyton Manning, and maybe he gets better as the season goes on. But with two hurt quarterbacks, maybe it comes down to defenses, and right now it seems that Denver certainly has a great one, and the Lions had some reworking to do with their signings and losses in the offseason. Let's move on to a couple questions. First, I know Mike, you have a question for Adam, and then we'll do the reverse. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, so far I've been looking at the Detroit Lions, looking at them on paper, think about who they were last year. They brought in Amir Abdullah from Nebraska. Their offense looks like it's supposed to be potent, but yet last year and what I've seen so far this year hasn't really done anything. I could almost say the same thing on the defensive side of the ball. They're a pretty good defense last year. They haven't been able to stop much this year. Who are the Detroit Lions, and are they someone that – are we looking at a pretty bad team? Are they going to go winless this year? What are you thinking there in Detroit?
You know, I know you're joking, but that still hurts. That still hurts. The wound is a little too fresh. It's hard. It's hard to establish an identity when you've had the line play, at least on the offensive side of the ball, as poor as we have. Looking at the Pro Football Focus ratings, outside of one offensive guard, that's Manny Ramirez, who you might recognize, we haven't had any better than a -3 rating for any of our offensive linemen that have had any reasonable amount of snaps. So it's tough to get any protection for Stafford. It's tough to get lanes in the running game. Amir Abdullah is rock solid when you can get him a little bit in space. He's good at doing some stretch plays, finding a seam and turn it north-south. But when you have a defense that can just blow up any little blocking that's there, it's going to get stuffed immediately. And as far as on the defensive side of the ball, I think one of the most ridiculous stat lines I looked at was after week one in the Chargers. There was somewhere in the ballpark of 260 yards passing that Phillip Rivers had that came within between the hash marks and 10 yards or less from the line of scrimmage. So everything was short. Everything was short. They were just running screens and crosses. And I, you know, this may be a little bit of me being an optimist, but we're still missing DeAndre Levy, who I think is the most criminally underrated player in the NFL. He hasn't played a snap yet, and that's where he makes his money. I think he's the best screen buster in the game. So once we get that piece back, I'm optimistic that the defense will bounce back at least to a degree, but I have no idea what this offense is going to be until the offensive line can get their protection sorted out.
That does sound scary, especially maybe the deadly 90-yard screen pass to Demaryius Thomas rears comes back into this game. But, Adam, you had a question for Mike. Let's go with that quickly.
I do. Looking at last year, the rushing game for the Broncos was potent. And looking at the stats this year for C.J. Anderson, he's got 24 attempts, and he's averaging 2.3 yards per carry. Just not what it once was. I know there's been some changes in the offense over there, but I was curious your thoughts on the seeming lack of a running attack for the Broncos.
So I think there's two ways to respond to that. First off, we were going into training camp with three guys on our offensive line that have never played an NFL snap. We brought in Evan Mathis and was thinking that he was supposed to be good. You were throwing out some stats. Him and Vasquez on the right side, they're rated the two lowest of our offensive linemen. Our rookies are playing better than Evan Mathis right now. It's kind of scary with who we have on the line. They're not blocking for Manning. They're not blocking for C.J. Anderson. They're not blocking for Ronnie Hillman. The other side of this, the worst prediction I made going into this season was that Monty Ball was going to pass C.J. Anderson. Part of the reason for that, obviously, Monty Ball ended up getting cut by the Broncos, so that was a horrible prediction. Part of the reason, I don't see C.J. Anderson fitting this offensive style very well. He's a hard runner. He hits a hole hard. I feel like we need a back that is a one-cut back, and so far that's been Ronnie Hillman. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ronnie Hillman pass C.J. Anderson somewhere down the line with this offensive style that we're playing right now.
All right. Well, even quicker, Mike, give me your winner and score prediction for the game.
Denver Broncos, 31-21.
All right. And Adam?
Unfortunately, I think you're real close. I was going to say Denver 28-17.
All right. Well, let's see how it all pans out. These guys battled here on Next Fan Up, and we'll see their real battle on Sunday Night Football.
One more quick battle, although it's not really a true battle because we don't have a Seahawks superfan currently. This is the Chicago Bears at the Seattle Seahawks. Chicago Tom is with me. Hello, Chicago Tom.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Our Seattle superfan retired after week one, so we're still looking for one. If you'd like to apply, please send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. We're basically looking for someone that knows a lot about their favorite team, and that favorite team should be the Seattle Seahawks. In the meantime, I will step in, not really as the Seahawks superfan, but more as a counterweight here for Chicago Tom. Tom, we know that you were very pessimistic about the Bears going into the season. Your team's 0-2, and now Jay Cutler is out. Is there word how long Jay Cutler is out? Or better question, here I'll set you up for, as we begin this preview. How far can Jimmy Clausen lead the Chicago Bears?
Well, Jay's out reportedly for 2 weeks. Kind of a shame that he got injured when he did. I won't say he played very well against the Packers, but he was doing quite well against the Cardinals last week. And the Bears are starting to use his mobility to their advantage and using it really effectively with the read option. So it's kind of a shame, but Clausen looks like he's going to take over for a couple weeks. He got a start last year. His passer rating for that start against the Lions was a 77, which I thought was not good, but it was at least respectable. I would expect him to hopefully perform similarly to the way he did in that start. And that means not great, but maybe not so bad that, you know, the team will completely collapse. I mean, it's very hard to predict that he's going to lead them to a win. If he does, you know, we'll all be extremely happy in Chicago. Truth be told, I think we'll be extremely happy if they just keep it within the 14-point spread. And that's just facing reality. The Bears haven't won on the road since week six last season. And CenturyLink Field is just about the worst venue that you can play in the NFL. You know, you got Seattle, they're 0-2, they're looking to recover. And I think they see this as an opportunity to really get back on track. I think it'll be really interesting to see if they can get Jimmy Graham up and running this week. I think he's a guy to keep an eye on if you're a Seattle fan. The Bears linebackers have not been great in coverage. I think Graham can really take advantage of that. It'll be really interesting, and it'll be interesting to see if they can run Marshall behind what I consider to be a poor offensive line. The Bears have not been bad along the defensive line, and that might be a matchup to watch. I would not be at all surprised if they manage to clog the middle at least and continue to limit Marshawn Lynch's yardage. Where Seattle, I think, is going to make their yardages with the pass against a really slow Bears defensive backfield. And if Russell Wilson can throw some accuracy this week and use his mobility to keep the Bears from sacking him, they haven't had a sack in either one of the first 2 weeks. I think that's where Seattle may make their gains. As a Bears fan, offensively against their defense, they'll continue to run Matt Forte and hope that.
Please do.
Right now it looks like Alshon Jeffery's out for another week. At least he's not practicing. Kingler may be back. He may not. I've heard conflicting reports on that. If he is, we'll be interested to see if there'll be some rust there. Maybe they can make some hay on that. I wouldn't hold my breath, but I would look for the Bears to keep it on the ground, try to keep the Seattle offense off the field, and try to control the game in that fashion.
You mentioned quite a few things during that preview. Thank you very much for going very quickly through basically the entire game. but you mentioned Russell Wilson in his only start versus Chicago. He was very good. 23 of 37, 293 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. That's a 104.9 rating. He also included 71 rushing yards. By the way, when he does that thing, when he has a rating over 98.7, he's 26-2. I don't see any reason why Russell Wilson can't have a similar day. Sorry, I don't mean to pile on. Cam Chancellor also back for the Seahawks. Unknown if he's going to play in this game. My guess is he probably will. I don't know why they would hold him out any further unless he's not physically ready to perform. But, you know, I don't see a problem with that. You mentioned Alshon Jeffery, and this is an interesting note. We're going to talk about this a little bit later on with a couple of the other super fans. But it was pointed out to me by our Steeler super fan, Greg, that Ryan Shazier has opened himself up for stocks, apparently. There's this website called fantex.com, and you can actually trade stocks on certain athletes. Did you know Alshon Jeffery is one of those?
I did know that. I have not invested, but I did read that last year when he joined that. I can't imagine they're making a whole lot of you invested in. He's making a whole lot on it right now. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. You know, they'll be looking to re-sign him after this year. How they handle him is going to be really interesting. He's just not been healthy. He's got a lot of soft tissue injuries. John Fox has brought that up actually in interviews in the off season. And he's going to be a tough one for them to decide on. You know, he's one of the few really talented players that they have. I don't see how you could let him go. But on the other hand, you can't depend on him either. You know, things like you know, his hip or his hamstring. It's always something that's sort of like keeping him out of these games. It's been a little bit difficult.
Well, I mean, right now you can buy him at $11 a share. Are you saying sell or buy? Because I think that's a buy.
Yeah, it's a buy. I think somebody's going to pay him. That'd be my guess. The question whether it's going to be the Bears or not. But I can't imagine that's where talent will be wasted.
All right, Tom. Well, thanks for joining us again. If you want to be that Seattle super fan, I guess I should get it for the game before I lock this out. I'm assuming you're going with Seattle here.
I have to, but I'm going to give the Bears the benefit of the doubt and call it 28-18. Keep it within the spread.
Yeah, the spread I have is actually 14.5, and Number Fire is saying it's a 59.9% likelihood Chicago will in fact cover that spread. I will also take the Seahawks to win, but I will not take them to cover the spread. Chicago, Tom, you're awesome. Stay awesome.
Thanks.
So those are the battles that we have this week. Real quickly, let's do our picks, Ron and Monty. Atlanta at Dallas. Dallas, obviously, now without Romo, without Dez Bryant, and the Falcons being my boyfriends, I'm going to take the Falcons, but I'm not going to feel good about it. I feel like this could be a trap setting the Falcons up. But then again, considering what I said last week, who knows what I know. Ron, how about you?
All the way on this. I just think it's too much injury to overcome for Dallas, and bringing Whedon into a game you didn't know you're going to go against him versus planning for Whedon an entire week. Falcons.
Monty, how about you?
I'm actually going to go with the home team. I think all the injuries are going to kind of band together and galvanize, and I think that Julio Jones is a beast, and I don't know if Morris Claiborne has what it takes to shut him down, but I just have a feeling the Cowboys are going to sneak this one out in an ugly game, and the offensive line is going to reassert its dominance over the Falcons and Pod's boyfriends.
How dare you? How dare you talk about my boyfriend that way? The Broncos and Lions is the Sunday night game. Most of America is going heavy on the Broncos. I am going to follow suit. I didn't see the Lions starting 0-3, but I don't see the Broncos losing here. Ron?
I am taking the Broncos.
And Monty?
I will be cheering for the Lions with all my heart. Just, you know, maybe let's call it a career Peyton Manning, but I got a feeling the Broncos are going to win this one in primetime. Seems to be Peyton Manning will come through this one.
And the last game I tacked on to the end of the Battle of the Superfans, the Bears and the Seahawks. To me, this seems pretty obvious. One of these 0-2 teams is no longer going to be winless. And to me, it seems like it's fait accompli. I'll throw some French at you that the Seattle Seahawks are going to come away with a victory in this one. How about you, Ron?
No way Seattle loses this game. No way. They're not going 0-3. They'll take it.
Monty?
Lock it up. Seattle Seahawks at home. No chance for Jimmy Clausen.
Ooh. I like it.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
That's my lock sound until I actually create something. But somebody's busy with their real job to create sound effects for his podcast. All right. It's funny because my real job is all about podcasting. All right. So it's the Bengals at the Ravens. Ron, what did King Rex have to say to this question? I asked every super fan a burning question this week. And for Rex, it was 0-2 start for real or just the result of starting the season on a West Coast road trip?
He says playing two straight games on the road, even if it is on the West Coast, should never be a valid excuse for a professional football team. The game versus the Broncos was a game between two really good defenses and thinking all they had to do was show up. And a young, talented offense in the Raiders realized how good they could be.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens definitely have not started the season the way that they want to. It's been disappointing. They do get the Bengals in town. And right now it seems like the Bengals are the darlings now of the AFC. My question to Australian Simon, aka English Simon, was, can Andy Dalton lead this team to a playoff victory? Because it seems pretty clear this is a playoff team. Monty, what did he have to say to that?
He thinks that Andy Dalton's definitely got what it takes, but I think the defense is the key to whether or not the Bengals can keep on winning.
All right. My pick in this game is the darlings. I'm going with the Bengals on the road here. I know it's this seems to be one of those typical games for the Bengals where they always let down their guard. Just as soon as everybody buys in, that's when they go and show their true colors. But I really like the Bengals in this game. I like the talent. I think they can pull it off. They are underdog 2.5 points. Number Fire doesn't agree with me. They say that's only a 46.6% chance of happening. I'm still taking the Bengals. Ron, what do you think?
I'm going to go with the Ravens. I'm not saying I feel great about it. And I just believe they're going to get it, you know, get a win here, not go 0-3.
Monty?
I'm saying that bad Andy Dalton shows up in Baltimore and the Ravens take out all of their aggression of being, you know, to breaking so many eliminator pools, they're going to come out and take it out on the Bengals and they're going to get their first win.
Monty, your game's up next. It's the Raiders and the Browns. And before I get your take here on the Raiders, our super fan for the Browns, Rob, sent us a nice quick update on the quarterback position. Johnny Manziel has led this team now to a good start, and he is not going to be starting in this game. He's been benched. McCown is taking over. And here's what Rob says. He has something to say out there for the many idiot national writers. I'm looking at you, Dan Wetzel, who seem to think that they have an idea about the Browns after watching maybe 5 minutes of a game this year. Johnny Manziel is not the answer, and he never will be. But you say he only had 50 snaps. They should see what he can do. They have. In those 150 snaps, he has fumbled 12 times. Luckily, only 5 of them were lost fumbles and thrown 3 interceptions. So 1 out of every 10 snaps, he is trying to give the ball to the other team. I don't know anyone, even Jamarcus Russell, who has been that bad. Just because he had a wide receiver that was open 30 yards twice due to a broken coverage and threw a touchdown to him doesn't mean he should start. Just because the Browns used a first-round pick on him doesn't mean he should start. Tim Couch, anyone? Look, the win on Sunday versus the Titans was great, but he still fumbled the ball 2 times, both recovered by the Browns. And he only threw the ball 15 times, total of 172 yards. This isn't JT Barrett versus Cardale Jones here. This is a failed pick by the Browns that the national media is hoping will do well so they can do their feel-good story on him and how he has changed. It's great narrative, but it isn't happening. Not every game will the D get 7 sacks and force 3 fumbles to keep the Browns in the game. McCown is the starter, as he should be, and Manziel will be the backup, if that, for the rest of his career. Get used to it. I dare say, what has Josh McCown done to get this love from Rob? Monty, what do you think about this? Your team's going up against the Browns.
Well, first of all, I have to say that Rob Brownie is dead wrong. He said he's never seen anyone, even Jamarcus Russell, who's played that bad. And I beg to differ, sir. Jamarcus Russell played infinitely worse. It was brutal, set back the franchise for a long time. But I think his point's valid. And these games, you can't rely on your defense to get that many sacks and turnovers. And Johnny Manziel, in the few snaps that he's had, has turned the ball over a lot. As a Raiders fan, I was hoping to see John Manziel. Just because McCown, I mean, I get what you're saying. He's not the top of the league, but he's not a turnover machine, or at least hasn't been that few shining games that he played in Chicago. I know down in Tampa he didn't have a very good run, but I just think he's going to play conservatively, you know, hand off the ball, not take any chances, whereas, you know, try as Johnny Football, it might, there's still got to be a little bit of Johnny Football where he's going to try to make some plays that he just isn't talented enough and give the Raiders a chance. So as a Raiders fan, I was pulling for John Football.
Now, the Raiders are a team that traditionally does not travel to the east side of the country that well. Granted, Cleveland's not necessarily East Coast, but it's close enough. We're going to consider it east-ish. How's that? And they did play, they did play at Cleveland last year, and they lose to quarterback Brian Hoyer. But Brian Hoyer is not in Cleveland. It's apparently Josh McCown. What do you see? I do like the breakdown that you had on Sunday about the effect that Amari Cooper is going to have on this Raiders team. Why don't you reiterate that on this show?
I think Amari Cooper is... You know, he's got the potential to be an awesome wide receiver. I kind of put him in that, I mean, I know it's early and I don't want to sound like a complete homer, but in that same vein as like an Antonio Brown, Marvin Harrison, just a quick guy who's quicker than he is fast. He has a knack to seem to get open, and he's running polished routes and he's getting open. I think this game's going to kind of come down to, you know, AC/DC versus Iron Hayden. If Joe Hayden is one of the top cornerbacks in the league and Cooper can get open against him, I think that he is going to have an excellent season. And for being so as young as he is, him and Derek Carr are going to grow up together for the next 4 years. And I think that it's going to be something fun to watch, especially for Raiders fans who haven't had much to cheer for in the last 12 years.
It sounds to me like you're definitely picking Oakland in this spot. I don't want to speak for you. If you could clarify that, that'd be fantastic.
I have to see Khalil Mack, and if Alden Brown is still eligible to play, get some pressure on McCown, get some sacks, get some turnovers maybe. But yeah, definitely got to pick the Raiders as long as, you know, they're on this win streak. Let's ride the wave. Let's say the Raiders take this one.
Ron, what do you think?
Take the Raiders.
I'm actually going to stick with Cleveland. This is going to my theme of who do I believe in more? And sorry, Monty, but I just don't buy the Raiders. And I especially don't buy them coming east-ish. Number Fire is telling me that Oakland doesn't really have a chance to cover the 3.5-point spread here. They like Cleveland a lot at 68.2%. By the way, this is my new useless stat, if you haven't noticed. When Number Fire fails me, I'll find another useless stat. But I'm going to go with Cleveland in this one. And honestly, I don't think McCown finishes this game. I as much as Rob Mayanat, I don't necessarily think he's wrong in that. I don't think Johnny Football is the answer. But I do think he's a better answer than Josh McCown. Indianapolis Colts are at the Tennessee Titans. Ron, what do we have to say here about Tennessee?
Okay, well, the Tennessee fan, for shame, did not send us in a preview, but that's okay. But it should be interesting to see. I mean, there's a lot of things about this game that's interesting. On the Tennessee side, it's going to be about Mariota, in which Mariota shows up, week one Mariota or week two Mariota. But the Colts defense isn't necessarily been stellar either, so really hard to know how all this is going to play out. I'm a little lost on this game, tell you.
Monty, what does our indie super fan have to say on this one?
He's kind of concerned whether or not Andy Luck is going to keep on turning over the ball. Very concerned over the defense. He's got some questions about the offensive play calling. And I'm kind of with them. I think the Colts defense kept picking against them last year in the playoffs, and somehow they kept on winning, making it to the championship game. But he says that their defensive line needs to play well and need to get after the rookie. And, you know, he's hoping that this turnover machine that Andy Luck has been the first 2 weeks is going to come to an end.
This is another one of those. I just don't believe the Indianapolis Colts are an 0-2 team. I think they're going to get their act together in this one. And I think the Titans are the recipe for that to happen. Now, the Titans are at home and they do have a different quarterback under center. But it means that the Titans have always had a different quarterback under center during that 7-game win streak for the Colts. I'm going to go with Indy. Monty, how about you?
I'm going to go for the Colts to get off the schneid as well.
And Ron?
I'm going Colts the whole way, this one.
Who swept it The Pittsburgh Steelers are at the St. Louis Rams. Monty, what does our Rams fan have to say on this?
He's concerned that the Rams offensive line is not held up. Their best chance is to go through the air, and he's hoping that Brian Quick makes his season debut, and he'd like to see Gurley out on the field. I imagine Gurley might get a few snaps, but I don't think we're going to get to see the full potential of Gurley for a couple more weeks still, at least till after the bye week. But he's got the Rams and Steelers having a pretty high-scoring game, but at the end, he's got the Steelers winning.
I actually like the Steelers in this game, too. This is, again, a situation where the Rams came out and they were great in week one, and then they sort of let their guard down in week two. I don't think the Steelers are going to let their guard down Rams, and the Rams might be up for this game, but I just don't see them pulling it off. Ron, how about you?
Well, the Steelers fan is feeling really good about their offense. Obviously, they're getting back Le'Veon Bell, and he feels like communication issues with the defense from week one were cleared up a lot. Week two, their talent showed through, and he's feeling really good about the Steelers. I am as well.
That's a good point. Le'Veon Bell coming back for this game, I think that's a big boost for the Steelers offense in this one. Speaking of our Steelers superfan, Greg tweeted this at me about Ryan Shazier, the second year linebacker for the Steelers, the first round draft pick in 2014 by them. He signed up with this company called, let me make sure I get this right. And you can go to this to their website, fantex.com. And basically what they do is these athletes are offering up their stock. You can actually trade their stock and earn dividends on their earnings. I'm going to quote the article that Greg tweeted out here. It basically, Shazier signed an agreement with a San Francisco startup company in which the player will pocket $3.1 million in exchange for investors getting 10% of his future earnings, including football salary and in deals. So I went, hey, this sounds kind of interesting. Let's find out who else is signed up here on Fantex. I don't currently have Shazier on the website, or they don't. But some of the other NFL players that are available are Jack Muhort. I'm guessing he's an offensive lineman. They don't really recognize him. Michael Brockers, Alshon Jeffrey, Mohamed Sanu, EJ Manuel, Vernon Davis, and Kendall Wright. So my question now to you gentlemen is, who are you buying and who would you sell? First of all, just on name alone, which guy do you want to buy, Monty?
Oh, definitely Ryan Shazier. I think that kid is a stud. He seems to have a nose for the ball. He's making tackles left and right, and I think he's only going to get better. And it just seems to be the next in line to take over that Pittsburgh Steeler awesome linebacker mantle. And if I was investing, he'd be my guy as well.
I don't have his stock readily available, but the most expensive stock out of the guys I listed is Mohamed Sanu at 13. To me, that's a sell. Unless you got in at an earlier rate, I would not buy Mohamed Sanu at 13. Ron, these guys seem interesting to you. What stock do you want to buy?
Yeah, for sure. It's Shazier because, the Dolphins have needed linebacker help for a few years now, and I was so frustrated, and so were Dolphins fans when we passed on him, and we heard a lot of our local pundits say, oh, no, he's not going to be any good. Well, they were wrong. Dolphins were wrong, and you'd be right to buy some stock in this.
I agree. Shazier is definitely going to be a buy. The other guy I would buy right now is Alshon Jeffrey. He's an $11 buy. So buy Alshon Jeffrey. I'd also buy Michael Brockers a great deal at $9 a share. These other guys, I would sell EJ Manuel as quickly as you possibly could, only $7 a share. He's the cheapest of the gentlemen to purchase. Vernon Davis at $8 a share. He's near the end of his career. I don't even know if I would bother buying.
I'm sorry, Pat. I think Vernon Davis or Vontae Davis? Which one was that?
No, it's Vernon.
Okay. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah, Vontae Davis, if he was available, I might buy, although he is injured. Kendall Wright is at $10 a share. I would sell Kendall Wright. But an interesting thing here, Fantex.com, they did not pay me for this endorsement. So Fantex, if you'd like to pay me in the future, please feel free to reach out. It's Pod Vader. The next game on the list here, the San Diego Chargers at the Minnesota Vikings. Monty, I'm still not buying the Vikings. What does our super fan have to say?
He is a little bit concerned about Blair freaking Walsh. He says once the kickers start to get the yips, it's just he's waiting for him to cost them a game. But he was kind of happy to see Adrian Peterson back to Adrian Peterson-like numbers. And for the
Pod Vader, was he really Adrian Peterson, though?
For the Pod Vaders that are ready to write off Adrian Peterson, if he's going to get 134 yards rushing at 4.6 yards attempt, and even if it was a broken play, he added 58 yards receiving, he'll take that all day, pun intended.
Yeah, the burning question I had for him was Adrian Peterson did nothing week one, got yards in week two, but that was after a lot of carries, 29 to be exact. Is the rust coming off, or does AD stand for all done? And then I mentioned that, oh, I hate it and love it at the same time because I made my pun. He won up my pun. In this game, I still don't believe in the Vikings. I'm not going to believe in the Vikings now. So I will take the San Diego Chargers here on the road. Monty, what are you going with?
Got to go for the Vikings. I like Greg Zimmer's defense. I don't know his first name, but that defense is playing well. That Xavier Rhodes, I think, is the cornerback. He had a pretty good game against Megatron. I don't think the Chargers have the firepower to match this defense, and I'm looking for Phillip Rivers to get beat up a little bit.
Ron, what do you got for me?
I'm taking Minnesota, and I'm actually even pointing to the Chargers point that last time that they faced each other, Adrian Peterson went single game rushing record. So obviously the Chargers have issues controlling AD, whatever you want to say it stands for. And I'm thinking that the Vikings are going to take this one.
Next game here is the Jaguars at the Patriots, and I'm just going to hit it right now.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
I'm locking in the Patriots. You know, Tom Brady on the 2015 Gronk U Tour, the Jaguars are going to get gronked all over. Sorry, Jacksonville. I think they're building a nice program down there. I just don't think they're ready for Brady and his jelly. What say you?
I'm not sure Giselle would like that Tom Brady has jelly, but I'm sorry I had to say that. But I do believe that the Patriots are really big in this game. And if you are a fantasy guy who has Brady, he's probably not going to leave the field no matter how much they're up. And he'll continue to throw into the end zone no matter when, what point of the game it is and how much they're up. So I see a big game for Brady. And I think the Patriots will favored by 12.5. And I guess 12.5, 13, they're going to cover.
Yeah, the Patriots in this one, they are favored by 13.5. My rule in point spreads that are double digits in the NFL is you do not take the points you give, you do take the points. So I'm taking the Jaguars to cover. The Patriots are actually usually pretty bad in digit spreads, but I locked the Patriots in to win. Monty?
I went with the Patriots too, but you got to like what Jacksonville's coach is putting together down there. I think the defense is much improved, and if Blake Bortles can play up to his potential, you got to like their long-term prospects, but they don't have a chance against New England.
No. The Carolina Panthers are hosting the New Orleans Saints. I asked our Saints superfan, the end, my friend, is Drew Brees done? And by the way, my answer to my own question is the answer is no. I'm tired of the narrative on the old-time quarterbacks. Oh, they're done. He's not done. They took away all his weapons and Sean Payton refuses to evolve. You're welcome, Chase. I just gave you your answer. But what was Chase's actual answer, Monty?
He said he did not think that the quarterback of Drew Brees' quality is all of a sudden done until he gets injured. He thinks the biggest problems for the Saints is that the offensive line is playing pretty shaky. He said they went up against two solid defenses, and he's got better hope for the future and the new receivers that Drew Brees is getting used to. So he's still keeping hope alive that Drew Brees is going to play, but is still up to the standard that he usually plays at. But if he's going to try to play this weekend with a bruised rotator cuff, I mean, maybe sometimes it's just better to take a week or two off and get right before you go out there and put your team in a tough situation.
Ron, did our Panthers superfan submit an update? Because the question I had for him was, why should I care about the Panthers? Because it might just be me, but I feel like Cam Newton is such a waste of talent. And if he put in half the time that Brady, Manning, or Breeze do in the offseason, I think he could literally be the greatest quarterback of all time. But again, it might just be me, but this is how I feel when I watch him, especially in post-game press conferences. He's always so cavalier. Like, he did that flip, and, you know, I don't know. I feel like he gets by on his own natural talent, but his potential, he's got the potential to be so much more.
I'm going to read to you what the Carolina superfan said to your burning question. I honestly could care less if anyone cared about Carolina. The last two seasons, Carolina has made the playoffs with the same exact formula and have stayed under the radar, which is completely fine. Carolina along winning the games they should win and hopefully sneak a couple wins in, which they shouldn't. Stating Cam is a waste of talent tells me you watch little of Carolina games. Cam would have had 1 to 2 more touchdowns this past week if Kevin Norwood / Ted Ginn. And if you're counting on Ted Ginn to catch balls, then you're really silly. But Brown didn't drop 3 passes that were leading to big gains, potentially touchdowns. So there you go. He says it's a one-man show in Carolina with Superman Cam.
All right. So, well, he's clearly bought all in on Superman Cam. All of that said, go ahead, Mom.
His last line is, I think it's absolutely ridiculous to say Cam is a waste of talent. Very ignorant, Pod Vader. I think that's directed squarely at you.
Clearly it is. Well, all of that said, I'm picking the Panthers to win this game. Number Fire likes them to cover the 3-point spread. 55, almost a 55% likelihood. Listen. Cam Newton, to me, I think, has the potential to be even greater than what he currently is. That's just the way I see it. And like I said, it could just be me. What do you guys got here? Ron, who do you like in this one?
I like the Panthers.
Monty?
I think you could make a living picking against the Saints on the road, so I'm going to go with the Panthers at home.
Very true. Very true. The Saints, who I had picked to win this division, I said I didn't like it when I said it, and I really don't like it now. I don't think the Saints are going to do that at all. Here's a team that many people did not see coming. The 0-2 Phillies against another team a lot of people didn't see coming, the 2-0 New York Jets. This game is another one of those. Which do I really believe? Do I really believe the Jets are 2-0, or do I really believe the Eagles are 0-2? Ron, what do you and the Jets superfan say?
I got to be honest with you. The Jets have me surprised. I would love to sit here and tell you as a Dolphins fan that I think it's just luck. But I mean, I've watched the games. Luck. They're doing what I hope the Dolphins were going to do. Play really good defense. Use the offensive talent they do have, which I think was ignored. Maybe some of the moves they made in Brandon Marshall, Decker from 2 years ago, that seems to be working for them. They're running the ball with Chris Ivory successfully, and Todd Bowles, he's heating them up. He's coaching them the right way. He's getting the best out of their talent right now. So I hate to say it, but I like the way the Jets are playing right now. If you're a Jets fan, I don't like it as a Dolphins fan. But if you're a Jets fan, you should be happy. You should be positive. I don't think it's a farce. I don't think they're fooling us. That's That's my opinion.
Monty, I asked Sicko, why should the panic be for real in Philadelphia? What did he have to say?
Yeah, poor Sitko. I think he is on the ledge right now. He is stressing it out. The panic button is pushed right now because they are a running team. And right now, DeMarco Murray is averaging 5.5 yards a game, not a carry, 5.5 yards a game. So he's definitely concerned. And I think that the only thing that he's taken solace in is that with the injury to Tony Romo and Dez Bryant, the Cowboys and are going to struggle a little bit down the stretch here, and he's hoping that maybe 9-7 and 8-8 is going to win the division. So he's hoping this is similar to when the Patriots got embarrassed on Monday night against the Chiefs last year. Then all of a sudden their offensive line gelled and they took off and went to the Super Bowl. So he's hoping that this 0-2 start is a bit of a wake-up call, and I guess we will see.
My useless stat is that I believe in the Eagles more than I believe in the Jets, and the Eagles have won their past nine versus the Jets. I am going to take the Eagles. Ron?
I am taking the Jets.
That's hard, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It hurts.
Monty?
Do like that Jets defense. I think they're playing well, but I'm taking the Eagles, I think mostly just for Sitko.
The Buccaneers and the Texans. To me, this is a toss up. This is a pick'em. The Texans haven't really lived up to their full potential this year. They're letting teams get out to a big lead, and then they're coming up just short at the end of the game. That said, I don't think we're going to see that happening here in this one. What did the Texan fan have to say?
Obviously, the play of Ryan Mallett will be what most people are watching for this week. Mallett had a pretty poor performance overall last Sunday against Carolina, completing only 46% of his passes and showing the inability to throw with touch on short routes. On the defensive side, the Texans defense has been rather disappointing so far this season. I know how you feel, Texans fan. J.J. Watt is consistently drawing double and triple teams, and to this point, no one else on this highly talented has stepped up and taken advantage of their one-on-one matchups.
I know, Monty, I'd called out Jameis Winston for being a little, what I said was a little immature. It didn't make me feel good if I was a Bucs fan watching Jameis Winston at the podium after the game against the Saints. But I know that the comeback from our Bucs fan was pretty solid. Do you have that?
Yeah, he said he couldn't disagree with you more. He just thinks Jameis is a young kid. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. And unlike all the draftees before him, you know, he just says it as it is. He isn't all coached up by his agents. And he says that he liked to see it. If he was a rookie quarterback playing against someone that he watched win a Super Bowl when he was in high school, he'd be pretty excited too. He's drinking the Kool-Aid.
He is drinking the Kool-Aid. Listen, I get it, because he is a young kid, honestly, and he is playing against, you know, probably some of the guys that he played with on his Madden game and pretending that he was those guys. I just don't want to see it in the post-game press conference. I just don't. It didn't warm the cockles of my heart. It made me worry for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And that's not the only reason, but I am going to take the Texans based a little bit on that. Also, Number Fire says it's a 66% likelihood that Houston covers the 6.5. What do you got?
I'm going to take Houston, but I do like the future for Tampa Bay and Winston. I just think he's fearless. He is not afraid to throw the ball downfield, but in this game, I'm taking Houston.
Monty?
I'm taking the home team as well. I just think that J.J. Watt and Clowney are just going to be too much, and Jameis Winston's not going to have as much time to make a play as he might have last week. I think that the Texans are going to get their first win.
We move to the 4 o'clock games, the 49ers and the Cardinals. And guys, I have a surprise for you, because I asked Drew Brooks, who is officially our super fan for now, But he's got a lot to do. He's a producer at ESPN. He doesn't have time for us. But I asked, at 2-0 with a healthy Carson Palmer, are these the true contenders of the NFC? And I noted it was interesting that Madden, the Madden game, predicted a Steelers-Cardinals rematch for Super Bowl 50 and actually responded. The Cardinals haven't lost a game in the last two seasons that Carson Palmer has started. They are 15-2 in their last 17 games with him behind center. There's no logical argument against the Cardinals being Super Bowl contenders as long as Carson stays healthy. And I mean, that's a pretty big if, but it's if that's happening right now. And I asked the 49ers super fan, if what do I need to know about the 49ers? Because I feel like I know nothing about them right now. Nobody seems to be injured. Nobody seems to be retiring. So what's going on in San Francisco? Monty, do you have answers for me?
Yeah, he said that everyone got a little too high on the team after that Monday night win in week one, and now they're a little too low on them after this win. Do you need to know is the Niners have a solid running game and Carlos Hyde, I know he's a little bit hobbled right now, but he's a good running back. And when he's playing up to his potential behind the offensive line, 49ers can play solid defense, take care of the ball. And if Kaepernick can keep playing solid football, 49ers are going to be a competitive team.
Nice. Well, here's an interesting note. Number Fire says the likelihood of Arizona covering the 6 points, only 35.6%. I don't know if I necessarily agree with Number Fire there. I'm definitely taking the Cardinals to win. I actually kind of like them to cover here as well. Ron, what do you say?
I'm going with the Cards. I think they're for real.
Monty?
Carson Palmer is going to carve them up. I think the home team is going to win again.
The other 4 o'clock game, because we've already covered Bears Seahawks, is the Bills Dolphins. We may have saved the best for last, Ron. To me, this is a total game of which is the real team, week one or week two. What do you have to say on this one?
I have a lot to say on this one, honestly. I mean, for the Bills, at least they have a which is the real team. I mean, for the Dolphins, it's been a bad squeak out win against Washington and then a worse loss against Jacksonville of all teams, which I still believe on paper Miami is much more talented than both those teams. But as usual, my Dolphins always have a way to play down to their competition or play up to their competition, but not quite enough to get the win most of the times. Last time we played the Bills, we beat them. But the last time we, but the time before that, they trounced us. Both games, Tannehill has been under duress. Both games against the Bills last year, both games this year so far against Washington and against Jacksonville. But Tannehill's been like the one of the few bright spots of the year. He's actually playing very well. He's in the top 10 in the quarterback rating. He's in the top 10 in passing yards. He's thrown 3 touchdowns, which isn't a lot. He hasn't thrown any picks at all. He's actually kept these games closer than they might have even been, sad to say. I mean, honestly, I don't know what to think. I was talking a lot of crap, no doubt about that, going into the season. And the second I saw them play on the field, I was like, whoa, this is not what I expected to see. I expected to see a playoff team, not a team struggling against some of the what I would consider the lesser teams. We'll see how the season bears out, but I'm not sure what to expect, but I'm not real hopeful, hate to say it, not real hopeful about this game against the Bills. Tell you the truth, I just don't think the matchups are very good for Miami.
What do you think of the stories about Ndamukong Suh going rogue last week?
I think that's probably a bunch of crap. I think it's just, I don't know how substantiated that is, honestly. And I think it's a little early for all that craziness. I think that's somebody, you know, throwing some, you know, fuel on the flame, if you will, of what kind of seems, even though this early, like it's all spiraling down. And it's not just Dolphins fans who thought the Dolphins were going to be a really good playoff, you know, contending team. The Dolphins thought they would be too. That's the shock of all this right now. And that's part of just all that kind of just feeds into it, because everyone's looking for some excuse as to why the line in particular is not playing the way they should be playing. I mean, so I don't make a lot of it right now.
Well, I do think the cure for Miami is being at home. So they've got that going for them. Buffalo right now is being picked by everyone for some strange reason, but Miami is favored. Number Fire doesn't like that, though. They say Miami's likelihood of covering the 2.5 is only 44.6%. I'm disagreeing with all of that. I watched the Buffalo Bills last week, and I know it's my team, not your team, against the Bills. I still think that the Dolphins are the second best team in this division. And, you know, it's still early. It's only 2 weeks. We're in week 3. So I'm taking the Miami Dolphins to win this one. Ron?
Bills.
Bills, really? You don't like your own team?
Reverse.
I love
Monty. Monty claims reverse jinx. Monty, who are you taking?
God, I just really think that Rex Ryan and his team so pumped up for that New England game. It's going to be interesting to see how they respond to it. In my opinion, I think the Bills are the second best team in this division. I think that defensive line should destroy Miami. But if they just kind of went all in last week and don't know how to respond to it this week, they could show up flat and get it handed to them. So it's kind of an interesting turning point for the Bills. Are they going to be a good, solid team the rest of the way through? Or are they going to just read their newspaper clips and listen to Rex Ryan run his mouth and then always disappoint? So I think this will be a pretty interesting game. I myself had the Dolphins pick, but I think I'm going to switch it up to the Bills. The lack of confidence from Ron is leading me to believe I might want to switch it to the Buffalo Bills.
Interesting. I'm going to stick with the Dolphins. I'm going to give you hope, Ron. I'm giving you hope. Our last game is Monday Night Football. We actually have a Battle of the Superfans. You'll be able to hear that on our Sunday evening show with Sitgo. So you'll have to tune in to the recap show to hear the preview for Monday Night Football. I will tell you, Number Fire says a likelihood of 52.7% that Green Bay is going to cover the 7 on Kansas City. I actually like Kansas City a lot more than what Number Fire is saying there. You know, honestly, Jamaal Charles, he does tend to have a little bit of a fumbling problem, but he's not going to fumble that much every week. Granted, they were two big fumbles in that game last Thursday. To me, I like the Chiefs a little bit more, the Number Fire. So I don't see the Packers covering. I do see them winning. I'm calling for a 24-21 game. Comes down to a field goal. And the Packers using field advantage to their advantage. Ron, what say you?
My upset special. I take Kansas City.
Nice. I like it. Monty?
Love Justin Houston. I think he's an animal. That's what I'm hoping that Khalil Mack is going to turn into. But at the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers is just playing lights out. I don't care who they line up at wide receiver. I think that he makes them better. And I just have a hard time picking against the Packers at home against anybody right now.
That's very true. If it wasn't for the Gronk U tour going on right now, I think we'd be talking a little bit more about Aaron Rodgers. But Tom Brady is definitely on a mission. I'm going to go undefeated, but it's certainly feeling like that right now, that they're trying to do the exact same thing that they did those years ago when they're accused of spying. Now they're accused of deflating footballs, and they're going Gronk. Yeah, well, they're saying Gronk U. That's what I'm saying. All right. Ron and Monty, thanks for joining me. Thanks to all the super fans that have been doing their job. If you want to read more of what they had to say, because they did have a lot more to say about these games, you got to go to facebook.com/NFU podcast. Feel free to tweet us at NFU podcast. And of course, if you want to join us, be one of the super fans, there's quite a few super fans feeling shame. So their jobs could be taken by you. So if you didn't hear us say anything good about the super fan representing your team, then you can join us. And of course, we do have an official opening for Seattle. Send those applications to nextfanup@gmail.com. I'm Pod Vader. And as I like to say at the end of every show, there you have it. Jeff Fisher?
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.